I hate to say it, but after 40 years of working in human rights, there is a human rights industry. There's a lot of careerists. There's a lot of opportunists. And they take what is politically correct in the moment. They take the flavor of the month. And they try to take personal advantage for themselves. We have a problem with the World Bank financing projects that destroy human rights. We have huge problems with the International Monetary Fund. They have just the wrong conditionalities. The way they condition their loans is, I must say, it shocks the conscience. But people like to determine their own futures. If, you know, if you have a particular culture, language, ethnicity, and you live in a multicultural and multi-religious country, well, you want to protect what's yours, and that's legitimate. That is your dignity. That is your identity. That is worth protecting. For me, that is human dignity. It's the
Finally, I have the mini shockwave stun gun and pepper spray combo available directly. These powerful defense devices are incredibly small size. It's an ace up your sleeve for self-protection. It doesn't pop up on x-rays and scanners, so you can conceivably take it places most weapons can't go. Self-defense should never be complicated, and the mini shockwave and pepper spray combo are very easy to use. I plan on making sure every woman in my family has one of these, and any teenager, boy or girl, should be carrying these around as well. If you feel that they're safe and can handle these with all the problems going on in this world, I would want my loved ones to be as protected as possible. Together, they're only $29.99. See the link below for this amazing deal.
Well, because they don't believe in human rights. They don't believe in human rights. They believe in their wealth. They believe in their power. And Lord Acton said famously that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So these people are in the second category. And they have no sense of international solidarity, or no sense, not even this residue of Christianity. This,
yeah, they can't be. You can't be Christians.
The one God is money and power, and that's what they want. And it's not easy to do away with it except through information. The mainstream media is not bringing that information to the public. The alternative media is. I mean, I've read some fabulous stuff in from Noam Chomsky and from Francis Boyle and from Mark Weisbrot and from Jared Porter, Democracy Now! Amy Goodman, Empire Files, A.B. Martin, and The Real News Network, and you. There's plenty of good people out there, but to what extent we can arrest this development before the development destroys the world, that is a major concern, and I am quite worried about the U.S. really revolting against international law so brazenly, and Donald Trump withdrawing from the Iran agreement that it took so much time to put together, withdrawing from all of these. I'm going to have a phone call. I have to stop it. Back to Syria. There are huge human rights violations. White helmets, a scandal, the white helmets, the false flags in Syria.
False flags all over the world.
I'm not in any way, shape, or form excusing Saddam. I mean, Assad. The narrative on Syria is all mixed up.
Well, the problem I have is they're making Assad look, you know, the narrative is that he's this evil man killing all these people. But in comparison to what's really going on, the 18,000 plus children whose organs got harvested and all this other crap that's going on, it's like, how can you even point to Assad being an evil man when our actions are causing all these other things to happen?
Well, if our leaders were intellectually honest, that would not happen. But they are not intellectually honest. I mean, we have been lied to. How is it possible that anybody believes anything that comes from Washington after the scandal of 2003? When the United States invades Iraq, 20th of March, 2003, it's a revolt against international law, probably the most serious violation of the Nuremberg principles since the Nuremberg trials, a totally unprovoked war of devastation against the Iraqi people. And what is more shocking is that it was based all on lies. It was an ocean of lies that we were served day after day by the New York Times, by the Washington Post, by the Wall Street Journal, by the Financial Times, and of course CNN and the others.
Well, they made us out to be, if you did not agree with this war, then you were not a U.S. citizen. You didn't believe in our country. You were like a traitor.
That's right. It's unpatriotic not to support the rape of Iraq. And then worse than just the lies, you have here a so-called coalition of the willing. George W. Bush managed to get not only this fool, this cynic, this Machiavel of Tony Blair on board. He got on board Silvio Berlusconi. He got on board José María Aznar of Spain, all democratically elected, who, notwithstanding the mass protests, the mass demonstrations in Rome and in Milan and in Madrid and in Barcelona and in London and in Manchester and Liverpool against the war against Iraq, and they still dragged them into this war, a war that Kofi Annan, the late Secretary General of the United Nations, on more than one occasion referred to as an illegal war. So here you have actually a revolt against international law, a revolt against international order carried out by countries that are ostensibly committed to democracy, rule of law, and human rights. So what you see is a panorama of devastation, not only of people and places, but it's a devastation of law. I mean, it's what the Romans used to say. Actually, you read it in Tacitus, in Agricola. Solitudinem faciunt, pacem appellant. They make a wasteland, and then they call it peace. And that is, the Pax Americana is exactly that, a wasteland.
Well,
we have devastated the country so that we can steal its resources. We do it in Iraq, we do it in Libya, and we damn well want to do it in Venezuela. And in order to make it palatable to the American people, you invent this whole argument of humanitarian crisis. Who has caused the humanitarian crisis but Mr. Trump, his sanctions, his financial blockade?
Many are aware of curcumin's great multifaceted benefits. It has antioxidant protection and hormone balance support. A research study indicates curcumin can help protect against estrogen-mimicking chemicals, help shield against free radicals, and encourage normal cell cycle growth, amongst many other things. But the Rev Genetics curcumin has been shown to get 270 times more of the compound into a woman's bloodstream than standard curcumin supplements. This means that this product works much better than any other curcumin supplements on the market. I am so excited to be able to offer this to you. Click on the link below and see scientific studies, charts, and comparisons, and much more.
But let's talk about that, because Trump is, I think he is, his rhetoric on the campaign trail and everything else sounded so great. Obama's rhetoric sounded so great to the point where he won the Nobel Peace Prize, but then he just continued the same crap too. Look what he did in Libya. And the whole Syrian thing happened under him. So who is really controlling this war machine? Because it definitely is not Trump. Because he's, or he's,
no,
yeah.
It's military-industrial complex. It's the likes of Donald Rumsfeld. You realize how much the man made? The likes of Dick Cheney with Halliburton? I mean, these people became super rich through the war.
Let's look at Libya and Clinton. If Clinton got in, I think we would already be at war. I mean, she was a war hawk. So, you know, I don't think it's any different under any president, because Obama made it. There was more people killed with drones under Obama than Bush. It just kept getting worse. So what is going on? I mean, how a president talks about it like this, I think, okay, you like Bernie Sanders, he'd talk about it like this, I think he'd have the same issue. It's not like he could dismantle it.
If Bernie Sanders had been elected, I don't think we would have seen agreement with Iran shelved.
That might make sense.
Would not have seen the U.S. pull out of the Paris Agreement on climate change. We would not have pulled out of the IMF.
See, I think the climate change agreement was really flawed. So flawed. It was so bad. So, I mean, I'm not sure. And I also think the climate change thing, there's a lot of issues there.
I agree.
So, yeah. Okay. But still, my point is that no matter, I think Bernie Sanders, you know, the whole election got fixed against him because the DNC was so corrupt. And then he sat down and did nothing. So does that tell me that he would be strong if he got in to be a president?
I'm not sure. I think that they would have tamed him.
That's my point.
It does not like to have a socialist or someone who even dares to call himself a socialist.
Well, I'm a free market person, so I don't really like socialism either, because I think free market can bring the best of things, but it can't be a fascist free market system like we have now.
A nice combination of the free market with humanity, with a human face.
That's exactly right.
Make sure that you have, and we're a damn wealthy country, we can offer medical care. Not necessarily like Obamacare.
Obamacare's terrible.
Was a bonanza for the insurance industry, but not for the people. I think that a country like the United States can have better schools, can have free schooling.
We can't if they steal. The problem is everybody's stealing. The trillions of dollars that are being stolen. Not to mention, you know, that's just from...
In the Pentagon.
Yes.
Oh, heavens. Back to Syria and back to the world. We have major problems of intellectual honesty in government. And what I also call the corruption of language. I don't know whether you remember when you were younger and you read Alice in Wonderland, this wonderful scene in Through the Looking Glass, when she meets Humpty Dumpty. And Humpty Dumpty is very happy and tells her, you know, Alice, I can make words mean anything I want. And Alice says, no, you can't. You know, words mean something. And says, you're wrong. I mean, words, I have the power. The question is not whether that is right or wrong, but whether I'll get away with it. And that is what is happening. As I said, human rights is no longer an entitlement. It's a weapon. We have weaponized human rights. And when you talk about democracy, it's certainly not direct democracy. Democracy means now that you give a vote either to Trump or to Clinton. And that's it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And then they decide for you.
Yeah, and it's fixed. I've proven that in some of my shows. It is fixed. Yeah. Now, let me ask you about China. China is obviously becoming a world power, and they have some major human rights abuses as well, including the millions of Muslims that are now in concentration camps. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? Because that's a human rights disaster that's waiting to explode.
China has so much power. That I don't see anyone in the region challenging China. The Muslim countries do not have the power to rescue Muslims in China. So that will continue with impunity. I don't see that changing anytime soon. You hear it in the Human Rights Council. You hear it in the Washington Post and in the New York Times. But I'm quite certain that the average Chinese doesn't have a clue
right.
What is also being done in their name.
I'm sure you're right. Just like the Americans don't have a clue that all those children whose organs were harvested. Let me ask you before we wrap up here. Are those organs then laundered and brought into wealthy countries as if they were just organs from somebody who was ready to die?
Well, I know probably less than you do. I mean, I know what I read in the press, and I've never actually devoted any time to a scholarly investigation of the issue. We had that problem also in the former Yugoslavia, in particular in Kosovo. There's several scandals of this nature, and they were essentially covered up. So I was never able to get enough proof of what was going on, but I read enough to realize that this was a genuine problem that was not being addressed. And interestingly enough, it was not being addressed by the Human Rights Council either. I find that the Human Rights Council has the wrong priorities. The Human Rights Council follows the media, follows the flavor of the month. And if the flavor of the month is gender, then they all do gender. Not that that is not important. Gender is very important. But I don't like to see gender instrumentalized.
Gender over, you know, gender is important, but let's put this in prior perspective. We have thousands of kids being harvested for organs alive, or we have millions of Muslims being killed in China for being Muslim in concentration camps. I know gender is important, but if we start focusing on these other issues, the gender stuff will kind of take care of itself, because if you focus on the value of a human right, human beings, then women will just automatically, we're human beings, you're a human being, I'm a human being, everybody's a human being, suddenly things start to level out.
Well, to end on a positive note, I think I was an early fighter for women's rights when I was, even before I joined the United Nations, and when I was the Secretary of the Human Rights Committee, and the chief of petitions, I took on many cases concerning the need to ensure that there is, for instance, equal pay for men and women, that there is non-discrimination against women, that they have the same chances, including affirmative action. Because if women have been kept away from education, have not had the same opportunities as men, in the United States it's less so, but in most of Asia and most of Africa, women really have been disadvantaged for generations and generations and generations.
And to clarify, it's basically you could have this brilliant woman who never got the opportunity to get the education because she didn't have equal opportunity and equal access. And so you have to be able to reach into those people and give them that chance later. The United States is a little different. It could be family oriented with that don't value the girl as much. But in general, we have that equal
right now,
opportunity
yes,
here.
But it was not the case in the 1960s
yes.
or in the 1970s.
I
mean,
agree with
there
you.
Has been progress.
Yes.
And I feel like many human rights activists, every little bit that we achieve is progress. I have been against the death penalty because I think it doesn't work. I think the death penalty does not deter people, and I don't think it's the function of the state to kill. It is a function of the state to protect. So I want to see the state protecting the citizens by giving the criminal a fair trial, if he's guilty, putting him in jail and trying to rehabilitate him. But in any event, I personally, as head of petitions, I introduced the practice of injunctions in the Human Rights Committee so that we issued systematically what we call interim measures of protection for these poor Jamaicans or Trinidad and Tobagans and Guyanans who were on death row. And I went myself to Jamaica, to Kingston, to St. Catherine's Prison, to the death row building, and I met several people on death row. And I must say, the personal mediation with the Governor General of Jamaica, with the head of the Court of Appeals, with the Ombudsman, that mission to Jamaica resulted in getting commutation of sentence for all of the people we were pleading. We managed to get a moratorium on capital punishment, which has been respected ever since.
Now, is it such that there are so many people that are being sentenced to death that are possibly innocent, or it's a crime that really doesn't deserve death?
I just don't believe that the state has the function to kill people. I really don't think so.
But let me clarify, is it because let's think about a person who systematically rapes and abuses children and kills them. I'd rather send them to Mars and just get rid of them. Someone like that who's just atrocious, it's hard to, now we got to pay and feed them and put them in a prison for the rest of their life. Is it that you're against killing someone like that, or is it that the risk of killing an innocent person and somebody who really, I mean, the death sentence is just
it's the
right
latter
for
consideration.
That group.
I mean, I am not against retribution in every case, but I am so afraid of killing an innocent person that there must be a lot of safeguards to prevent that from happening. And when I studied the cases in Jamaica and I looked at the transcripts, I said, this is at best second degree, or is involuntary homicide, something that happened, but something that was not premeditated. But since they don't have proper defense, they were all sentenced to death. So I'd rather not have people, in some cases, it was also mistaken identity, clear case of mistaken identity, but they were still convicted. So we've made progress. There's more and more countries that have done away with capital punishment. We've made progress in women's rights. We're continuing to make progress in women's rights. We just celebrated so many events here in Geneva on the 8th of March to celebrate International Women's Day. I participated in a couple of panels on that also. And that is all to be welcomed. But the whole system is corrupt when we have tax havens whereby everybody escapes without paying taxes. You have these investor state dispute settlement mechanisms that make it almost impossible for a government to protect its environment because of fear of a suit before a tribunal of three arbitrators, all of them corporate lawyers, who are going to find for the corporation and against the government. So you cannot protect an environmentally fragile environment because whoever it is who wants to go and dig there and extract gold there is going to sue you. And we have a problem with the World Bank financing projects that destroy human rights. We have huge problems with the International Monetary Fund. They have just the wrong conditionalities. The way they condition their loans is, I must say, it shocks the conscience. That's why I said, look.
Exactly. That's a huge problem.
I have a whole report to the General Assembly on that. And actually, I got applause when I presented it, which is unheard of. Rapporteurs are not supposed to be applauded. The only people who ever get applauded are heads of state. You don't get applauded at the General Assembly.
Good for you. You know why you were applauded? Because you had the courage to do it. And people aren't hearing people like you that can stand up and have the courage to do this. And we're seeing people like you have courage, and that gives more people to have the courage to stand up against these abuses. We're not going to all agree on all the details of politics, but we should all agree on these basic human rights and basic abuses of power. I mean, if we can bring that together, we can go miles ahead, because we agree on more than we disagree.
I would not say go and donate to Amnesty International or go and donate to Human Rights Watch. I hate to say it, but after 40 years of working in human rights, there is a human rights industry. There's a lot of careerists. There's a lot of opportunists. And they take what is politically correct in the moment. They take the flavor of the month. And they try to take personal advantage for themselves. What's important is what you are doing. What is important is what individuals are doing themselves in their communities, alerting other people about the problems. I never trusted, you know, giving money, donating money to an organization that then is going to follow, and they do, the priorities of the donor. It's the donor that sets the music. He sets the priorities for the NGOs. He sets the priorities for the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. The Office of the High Commissioner has been doing many things that, in my opinion, are of an ancillary importance, and they're not addressing major issues, for instance, the prevention of human rights violations and their recognition, for instance, that the realization of self-determination is a conflict prevention strategy. If you make sure that at the right time there is dialogue and mediation between a population that feels discriminated against, they have legitimate grievances, you don't want it to explode in a civil war. You don't want to have violence. This is a function of the United Nations to mediate, to organize a consultation, to organize a referendum. There are only three major referenda organized by the United Nations: in Sudan, in Timor-Leste, and in Ethiopia, Eritrea. But when did the United Nations step in? After hundreds of thousands of people have died. Instead of doing it preventively and saying, we see that there's a problem there, and we're going to anticipate, and we're going to talk to these people, and we're going to try to find, it doesn't have to be independence. It can be federalism. It can be autonomy. But people like to determine their own futures. If, you know, if you have a particular culture, language, ethnicity, and you live in a multicultural and multi-religious country, well, you want to protect what's yours. And that's legitimate. That is your dignity. That is your identity.
Absolutely.
That is worth yes. protecting. For me, that is human dignity. It's the right to be you.
That is
you have
dignity.
The right to be you. I have the right to be me. So let's agree on that. And then let's adopt policies that prevent one part of the population oppressing the other part of the population. I mean, that's not populism. I mean, I think that you can have majority rule as long as they respect the existence of the others. Is also what I told the Venezuelans. I spoke with the Venezuelan opposition. I spoke to members of the National Assembly. I said, whether you like it or not, there are 8 or 9 million Venezuelans who are Chavistas, and they're committed. They believe in it. If you topple the Maduro government, these 8 or 9 million Venezuelans are not going to go away. They're there. You have to take them into account. You cannot just say, we are better. We know better, and we will tell them how to run their business. Well, that might end up in a civil war, and that is...
Well, it's like, it's so uncivilized. It's like we're a big gorilla ape saying, I'm stronger. That it just doesn't work that way.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, how can people get a hold of you? How can they read your blog, read your information, well, see you? You know, maybe you
blog,
have speaking
my blog
events.
My is HTTPS, and then it's then the desiresalfred.wordpress.org. Yeah. And then I also have a website, Alfred Desires. Not Desires Alfred, but this one is Alfred Desires. No, just plain www.alfreddesires.com. And then, of course, I'm in Twitter, I'm in Facebook, and my email, let me give it to you simply, is alfreddesires in one word, all lowercase, small, alfreddesires@gmail.com.
Excellent. Is that okay? Is that okay to have it on this video so other people can see it and email?
No,
okay.
Sure, sure. They can contact me. I am now finished with my 6 years as rapporteur. I am retired from the United Nations. I teach at the Geneva School of Diplomacy, and then I give interviews. So I am much less overwhelmed as I used to be years ago. So if people write me, I'll do my best to answer.
Excellent. Thank you so much for this interview. I think it was very enlightening and really interesting, and I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for thinking of me.
Yes.
I hope to see you again.
Absolutely. I hope I can get you back.
Very well. Thanks. Bye.